verses 1 to 14. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already, long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. I, the teacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind.
G'day, my name is Richie. I'm one of the pastors at this church. I'm going to give a talk about that part of the Bible that was just read out. Now, apparently, as a kid, I had an incredible imagination. That's what grown-ups would tell me, at least. Maybe it was their way of politely saying, you know, come on, kid, get your heads out of the clouds. Or maybe it was actually a compliment. I'm not sure. I don't know. But nonetheless, I absolutely love to imagine and pretend. Every spare minute, I would be playing the part of one character or another, making up games, fighting off villains, saving the world, and I'd always, always have dress-ups on. From dawn to dusk, I'd be a knight or Robin Hood or an army man, and the one video recording we have of me as a child, I'm wearing a cowboy hat, a dinosaur tail, made with a stocking and some bits of newspaper, and I'm running around like mad shooting a toy gun. It's a lot of fun. But believe it or not, my parents were actually really, really concerned. They were worried I was out of touch with reality. They were worried I'd grow up unable to function in the real world. I remember quite a few tense conversations. Eventually, they imposed a strict boundary. They said, you're only allowed to wear dress-ups for 1 hour per day, and you can't wear them downtown either, or you can't wear them to Nance. Looking back, it's funny. I'm sure I was just a kid being a kid. That's what kids do. They play make-believe. They pretend. They imagine. But as we grow up, we do want to get a good grip on reality. Not to lose our fun and imagination, but to know what it is to live life in the world, to be grounded, not living in a make-believe world. The question we'll be asking today is, what is life actually? What's life? There's a few ways to answer that question. There's a scientific answer, you know, talk about biology and so on. There's a experiential answer where we hear people's stories of life in the real world. But what we're going to do today is go back and look at an old, old book, more than 2,500 years old. It's called Ecclesiastes. It's in the Bible, in the Old Testament. And we're going to hear what it has to say about life. Now, you may or may not agree with its take, but I certainly hope it's interesting for you to explore. Now, Ecclesiastes is an obscure book. It's not a well-known part of the Bible. Some people avoid it. They say it's too depressing or perplexing. For me, I've actually found it to be profoundly valuable, and just just for helping me get through each day, I found it particularly helpful for the harder parts of life. It helps me accept them, make sense of things rather than pretend or act like they're not there. Well, what does Ecclesiastes say about life? Well, it says, life is temporary, life is elusive, and it says, life is repetitive. Now, you might hear that and go, yeah, no wonder people avoid Ecclesiastes. Like, it sounds pretty miserable. But the author here, he's not writing to make people miserable, not at all. He's got a good purpose in saying these things. A few years ago, I went to Vietnam. We travelled in a kayak through a long, dark tunnel. But when we came out, we were in the most spectacular bay, like a lake with misty cliffs all around us. Or if you were to climb a mountain, it's painful, hard work, but the view at the top makes it worth it. And the author of Ecclesiastes is saying, if you come to grips with life as it is, if you learn to accept rather than avoid these things, it'll actually help you live life well. It'll help you live a meaningful, enjoyable, grounded life. But you've got to go through the tunnel first. So let's see his take on life, actually. We'll work through each of these 3 points one at a time. Firstly, life is temporary. Did you hear how Ecclesiastes began? It began, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. That's a real jerk, a jolt, a shocking way to start your book. Now, I have to say, the Bible translators usually do an excellent job, but in this case, I don't think they have. That word meaningless in the Hebrew original that this was written in, that word is hevel, and that word, it's notoriously hard to translate. It literally means like breath, like or mist or vapor, a puff of smoke. So literally it could read, breath, breath, says the teacher, completely airy, everything is a breath. That word, that metaphor breath, it packs a whole lot of meaning into it. And one of the things about breath or mist is how temporary it is. So on a cold morning, you go outside and you see your warm breath float out of your mouth, but a second later, it's gone. Or you look out over the hills of Lismore and you see the low-lying cloud, first thing in the morning, the mist there, but then you look a little later and there's no sign it was ever there. And Ecclesiastes is saying, this is what all things are like, short, temporary, impermanent. So he says, what do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. He's saying, you'll work hard all your life, you'll toil, but then you'll be gone, just like everyone else. My daughter, she just turned 8 yesterday, and she's obsessed at the moment with the different generations. You know, it's like Gen Z and Gen X, baby boomers. Before that's a generation called the silent generation. She can name the generations all the way back into the 19th century. But the thing about each generation is it comes and then it's soon gone. You talk to an older person, someone with experience, and they say, life moves so quickly. It all happens in the blink of an eye. Picture for a moment blowing out a candle. You blow out the candle and you can see the smoke. You can smell it. It's very real, but it's temporary. It vanishes, leaving no lasting impression on the world. And this is what life is like. The author says down in verse 10, no one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. We think of a child or a grandchild yet to be born, and their future is so tantalizingly bright, yet they too will not be remembered, he says. In the lead up to this event, we went and asked the people in the street in Lismore some questions about life. We wanted to hear what Lismore had to say. One bloke, we asked him, what, if anything, lasts forever? He said, nothing lasts forever. It's such a cliche, but it's so true. It goes for people and it goes for everything else as well. That doesn't mean there aren't good things in life. There most definitely are heaps of brilliant things in life. But the first point the author of Ecclesiastes wants us to get a grip on is that life is temporary. Next thing he says is that life is elusive. That's another thing that's communicated by this metaphor that everything is breath. See, breath is not only temporary, it's also incredibly hard to catch. Now, you try and grab a handful of smoke and you try to put it into your pocket. You can feel it, you can smell it, you can touch it, but it just slips through your fingers. You can never keep it. The author of Ecclesiastes, he says in verse 14, I've seen all the things done under the sun. All of them are breath-like, meaningless, are chasing after the wind. Now, the wind is the most elusive of all things. You chase it, but you can never quite catch it. And this is what life is like. It's elusive. So you save up, you work, your fingers are down to the bone, buy the home you've always dreamed of. And it's nice, but it's not all you dreamed of. The bathroom soon needs renovating, the gutters need to be replaced, and the neighbours are noisy. And actually, if only you had a house, right next to the beach, how good would that be? And the life you pictured living in your dream house, you never quite reach it. Or you imagine the car or the bike or the job or the partner or the family or the holiday or the success you've always wanted. And sometimes when we get them, actually they turn out to be bad, a ruinous disaster. But even if they turn out to be good, we're still not quite satisfied with life. There's still a restlessness in us, perhaps that we try and ignore, just keep busy, and maybe imagine what could be. And one of the most overdone sayings ever is the grass is always greener on the other side. The idea is that what I don't have seems better, more fulfilling than what I do have. So maybe you've been working a 9-to-5 job for years and you've had enough. You buy a camper van and you go traveling around Australia. And it's fun, but after a while you begin to miss the stability and normality of your previous life. But if I just go back to my old life, I'll miss the freedom I now have, and even blending them together doesn't quite work. And what do? There's an elusiveness to life, like chasing after the wind. And part of what makes life extra elusive is our lack of control over it. We can pour our whole self into something. It might succeed, it might fail. So you go to uni, become a software engineer, but AI takes your job, or the business you work for goes bust, and who's to know if you'll be the one to get the cancer or have the car crash? And what about how other people will respond to you in your life? See, there's so many factors outside our control. And on top of that, another thing that adds further to the elusiveness of life is that even our understanding of it can be elusive at times. So this is down in verse 17, the author of Ecclesiastes says, "Look, I've increased in wisdom more than anyone who's ruled over Jerusalem before me. I've experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. I've applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also madness and folly, but I've learned that this too is a chasing after the wind." We can know lots of stuff about the world. We can know stuff, and it can still be hard to make sense of things in the world. Why does the line at the supermarket that I don't join go much quicker than the line I do join? Why do we sometimes feel low or flat with no apparent reason? Why sometimes do the mean or greedy live long and prosperous, but the kind and tender-hearted have short or difficult lives? So the psychologist a month or two back, something difficult had happened, and he said, "How do you make sense of that?" He said, "We're meaning-making creatures. How do you make sense of that?" But often wisdom and knowledge, understanding, meaning, it's elusive. We live in an elusive world. So according to Ecclesiastes, life's short, life's elusive, and finally it's also repetitive. When I was in school, we used to sing the song that never ends. You know this one? It was like some people started singing it not knowing what it was, and they just kept on singing it because it's a song that never ends. I would sing those same lines over and over again. It was a very repetitive song. And the author of Ecclesiastes is saying, life is repetitive. See what he says from verse 5? The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north, and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All the streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Notice the repetitive, cyclical nature of the things he describes. The sun goes from one side of the sky to the other and then back again. The wind blows from the north and then from the south. The water pours into the ocean, yet the ocean's never full. Just as the stream, and just as the streams pour into the ocean but never fill it, so do the sights and sounds of the world pour into our eyes and ears, but we are never full, never completely satisfied. And round things go. Now, this week I mowed the lawn. I'll soon be mowing it again, just as I've mowed it countless times before. You know, you wash the dishes knowing you wash the very same ones the next day or perhaps more than once a day. Each day we eat food, yet we're never truly full. We eat again the next day. Now, for me, I'm always trying to find a new interest, a new experience. A few years ago, in my early 30s, I took up surfing. I never tried that before, got super into it. I still really like it, but I've sort of moved on a bit. You know, now it's guitar, learning guitar. I'm constantly watching YouTube videos on playing guitar. Last week, I for the first time, bought a cheap electric guitar on Facebook Marketplace. But tomorrow, I'm going to go get a different one and sell the one I've just got. Next month, I'll be going to Japan. I've never been there before. It's new and exciting. I'm maybe borderline obsessed with the new. But the new quickly becomes old, and I move on to the next new thing, and newness becomes the thing I'm used to. My friends probably say about me, oh, he's on to his next new thing. How repetitive. In fact, the author of Ecclesiastes says there's nothing new under the sun. What he means by that is that each new thing is really just another version of something else. And he's saying also that there's nothing under the sun that will break the constant repetitive cycle. Well, there we have it. According to Ecclesiastes, life is temporary, elusive, and repetitive. Now, of course, there's lots more you could say about life, lots of wonderful things we could talk about. But I think those key points are basically true. Life is temporary, elusive, and repetitive. But so what? Why give so much attention to them? I was chatting to someone about this sort of stuff last week, and she said, oh, if I think about the drudgery of life, the repetitiveness and elusiveness and so on, well, I get really down. So better not to think too much about those things. And I actually reckon what we do most of the time is we act a bit like what I did as a kid. We play make-believe, pretend. We're finite creatures, we're not in control, we're not God, we will die, but we avoid this reality. David Gibson has written a book on Ecclesiastes, and he's heavily influenced my thinking in this talk, and he writes that we play let's pretend. He says, let's pretend that if we get the promotion or raise good children, we'll feel significant and leave a legacy behind us. He says we play... let's pretend if we change jobs or immigrate to the sun, we won't experience the humdrum residue and ordinariness of life. Let's pretend if we move house, we'll be happier and we'll never want to move again. Let's pretend that if we end one relationship and start a new one, we won't ever feel trapped. Let's pretend if we had more money, we would be satisfied. Let's pretend if we get through this week's pile of dirty nappies and shopping lists and school runs and busy evenings, next week will be quieter. Let's pretend that time is on our side to do the things we want to do and become the people we want to be. Let's pretend we can break the cycle and finally arrive in a world free from weariness. But Ecclesiastes says no, meaningless, meaningless, breath, breath. Everything is a puff of smoke. Ecclesiastes says instead of pretending, instead of just trying to avoid these things, embrace them, accept them. And for the person who does that, that will do two things for them. The first is that when you accept that everything is breath-like, it helps you hold things lighter, not try and suck the life out of each thing. You can actually receive the things of this world as a gift from God and enjoy them for what they are. You can enjoy them knowing they're breath-like and not chase after them, that they'll come and then they'll go. That's okay. Now, Ecclesiastes spends heaps of time talking about this in later chapters, and we'll be looking further into the later chapters of Ecclesiastes at our church over the next 4 weeks, so you're welcome to come along. But the second and much more significant thing that embracing the breathiness of life will do for you is it'll push you to look beyond the airy things of this world. See, as you realise how breath-like things are, you might begin to wonder, is there something more to life than just this? So I have this inbuilt desire to chase things and I've been chasing after the wrong things. What is it that I'm looking for? What is it that I ought to be looking for? And the Bible says that that thing is Jesus. It says that he is the answer. Now Jesus, he claimed to be eternal. He said he was the eternal Son of God. Yet he entered into the temporary and airy and misty. He took on a human body, even died the death that was our due for us. He offered forgiveness for our foolish, often self-centered chasing of the wind. Yet he was unlike every other human. He said, "Behold, I have come to do a new thing." He broke the repetitive cycle. How did he do that? Well, he didn't stay dead. He rose alive again. Now, this isn't another version of make-believe, let's pretend. No, maybe a chat to the person who brought you along or to me afterwards. We have really good reasons, both from an historical and biblical perspective, for believing that Jesus did rise to life. And as a gift of love, he offers lasting life to whoever will have him. Life beyond the temporary, solid, meaningful life beyond the grave. Life with him. See, because in him, there's something that's so unelusive. We spend our lives chasing the wind, never quite filled up. Yet Jesus says, give up the chase. He says, come to me and drink and you'll never be thirsty again. He says, come to me and find rest from your weariness. He says, he offers lasting satisfaction, not in the airy things of this life, but in knowing him, the God of love from whom life comes. Without Jesus, if Jesus isn't all he claims to be, well, we might as well just avoid these realities of life, get on with living, not think about how temporary and elusive it is. Just try and make the best of things. But with Jesus, if he is who the Bible says he is, well, here is a way to live meaningfully and with real hope in a temporary, elusive and repetitive world. And did you know an increasing number of people are believing that? There was a recent mass survey done in the UK, and in the past 6 years, regular church attendance has increased from 8% to 12% of the population. That's an extra 2.1 million more people going to church, and most of that change is amongst young people. 6 years ago, 4% of 18 to 24-year-olds went to church. Now it's up to 16%. Of 18 to 24-year-olds in the UK. Now, we don't have a comparable survey in Australia, but anecdotally, the reports among university Christian groups are that more uni students decided to follow Jesus last year than any other year in recent memory. Even last week, I was reading in the news, Fox Sports, I was reading in the news that Max King, the latest debutant for the New South Wales Blues Origin team, he became a Christian at 17. Every Sunday morning, he'd get up, put on his gym clothes, get his gym bag, say goodbye to his parents, and head out. And after 6 months, he he came clean. He sat down and he told his parents, I haven't actually been going to the gym. I've become a Christian. I follow Jesus now. See, he and many others like him, they've found Jesus. They've found hope and meaning and life in a temporary, elusive and repetitive world. Well, I'll leave it there. A lot to consider. Feel free to take the time to think over that, maybe explore it more, do your own research, make up your own mind, all that stuff. But for now, I'll hand back to the singers and we'll sing our final song.